The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Well, today's show, we're going to bring you key excerpts from Tuesday night's leadership debate in the provincial election. It's scheduled for Saturday, October the 24th, but you can start voting on Thursday for a week in advance polls. Go to elections.bc.ca for information on how to do that. But what are the party leaders' key stances on issues that matter most to you, such as affordable housing, the opioid crisis, racism, and Indigenous issues? One issue united both opposition parties to John Horgan's government. Horgan got hammered by both of his opposition rivals, Green leader Sonia Firstenau and Andrew Wilkinson with the BC Liberals, for holding the election in the first place, a year before the expiry of a minority government agreement he'd signed with the Green Party, promising 4 full years of working together. That led to sharp rebukes from Wilkinson and Sonia Firstenau at the very start of the debate.
We need leadership now, not for a few months, but for the next few years.
It's astonishing to hear you say that you needed to put politics behind us by putting us into politics front and center in a campaign election when we didn't need it. And what we had in the legislature, what British Columbians were counting on and so grateful for, was we actually put a scientist out in front. We put politics behind us. All three parties indicated and acted on ensuring that we were putting people first. We were putting the needs that people had to have met in a global pandemic first. That's what we should be doing right now. That's what we're not doing. We're here on the stage debating things when we should be in the legislature making sure people are getting what they need.
It's never a bad idea to ask British Columbians where they want to go and who they want to lead them.
It's not a bad idea when you break an agreement and you break the legislation.
It was 3.5 years since the last election. That is an eternity with COVID-19. We need to make sure that British Columbians understand that we are going to stop this on the 24th of October and dedicate every ounce of our energy to making sure they're safe, making sure they're secure, and their families get through this. That's what we need to do. Us talking about how we get there is a good thing, not a bad thing.
What British Columbians need to understand is that you're willing to break your word, you're willing to break agreements, and you're willing to break legislation that you yourself passed in the legislature. In order to put the interests of your party, in order to seek that power and that majority that you so want
us, Sonia,
for
it's
obedience
not about us, it's
in
about
the
British
legislature.
Columbians. It's
and
about British Columbians.
That's
they deserve
that's time,
to have
Mr.
that support.
Horgan. We're moving on.
And you just heard their debate moderator and Angus Reid Executive Director Shachi Curl. But it was the issue of affordable housing and social services cuts to the most vulnerable that appeared to resurface the most number of times during the debate, coming up during multiple sections and answers. Here is another section between Wilkinson, Firstenau, and Horgan.
We've seen the results that happened in the early 2000s when there's a 25% tax cut across the board. We saw cuts in services. We see the results of that right now, 20 years down the road, when people are suffering from mental health issues, from housing and homelessness. This is what is the outcome of those kinds of tax cuts.
And I have said there will be no cuts to government services under a BC Liberal government. We've got to keep the budget going because those people sleeping in the park
Thank
near my house
Thank you, Mr.
need a home.
Wilkinson, thank you. That is time. But now back to you with a question to Mr. Horgan. You have 15 seconds for your question.
Well, coming back to housing, we've learned that condominium prices have gone up by 10% in the last year in Vancouver. House prices are up 5%. Condo insurance up as much as 400%. You promised British Columbians affordable housing. I think you know that rents in Metro Vancouver are up $2,000 per year since your government took office.
That's not true.
Your housing plan is a complete fiasco.
That's
because the cost of housing is the highest it's ever been, while incomes are actually going down. Rental situations are still difficult because the rent vacancy rate is still the same as it was when you took office. We've got a big problem here, Mr. Horgan, because your housing policy has produced no results whatsoever.
Again,
and we say it's time to increase the supply of housing.
You've got to get out of your neighborhood and talk to people, my friend. It's working for lots and lots of people. AJ, who was living in a tent in Maple Ridge, is now living in a house. He's no longer using drugs. He has a job, and he gets gets to watch football on a Sunday afternoon. We take that stuff for granted. But when you don't have a house and one is provided for you, it changes your life. That's what our policies are doing. You want to go back to let the speculators drive up. We'll make a lot of one-bedroom condominiums in downtown Vancouver and leave everybody else to fend for themselves. Housing belongs to everyone in every corner of BC, and that's what we're focused on.
If we want to talk about your record on homelessness, we'll get into that shortly, and it's pretty appalling,
Mr. People,
Harding.
Man.
What we're talking about here is people who are trying to look for a place to live for the long term. Renters can't find anything. The rents have gone up under your watch. And similarly, the cost of housing, someone interested in buying.
It's almost like you didn't think the world existed before 2017.
I know the truth hurts,
17
John,
years.
But you have to admit the truth at some point.
And that's time. That's it. We are now moving on to the next set of questions about the cost of living, housing affordability, childcare, and transportation. First up to you, Mr. Horgan, the first question. Your government introduced a number of measures to make housing more affordable, but according to Statistics Canada, British Columbians in more than one in seven BC households continue to live in a place that is considered unsuitable, inadequate, or unaffordable. What other tools do you have to help and support people struggling with housing affordability in this province? You have 1 minute, sir.
Thank you very much. Well, the challenges of housing have been enormous. In 2017, it was the number one issue on everyone's minds, particularly those who live in the Lower Mainland, where they saw the average house price in Vancouver go up by $600,000 over 2 years, because the focus of the former government was on speculation and money laundering, not on people, not on roofs over their head, not on affordability. We brought in a host of measures, again, working with the Green Caucus to make life more affordable. We've seen the curve drop down on the cost of housing. It's still unacceptably high in metropolitan areas, but in the rest of British Columbia, we're building not-for-profit housing. We're focusing on co-ops again. We're making sure that renters get a bit of a break. We give homeowner grants to people who are fortunate enough to own a home. We should give renters a break as well. That's what we've been focusing on, bringing costs down for people in the whole continuum of housing they're looking for. It's not just houses in Shaughnessy, it's houses all over BC, and we need to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to have the dignity of a roof over their head.
It took 1 hour for the debate to turn to social questions such as the opioid crisis, homelessness, and racism. Here is moderator Shachi Curl from the Angus Reid Institute.
It's now time to move on to issues surrounding social issues, including racism and inclusion, homelessness, and the opioid crisis. And we're going to start this segment with a personal question to each of you about racism. You're going to answer this question consecutively, first beginning with Mr. Wilkinson, then Mr. Horgan, then Ms. Furstineau. And the question is this. This has been a time of tough conversations about the inclusion and treatment of those who are Black and Indigenous and people of color. How have you personally reckoned with your own privilege and unconscious bias as a white political leader? We're going to give you a little bit of extra time on this question. You have a minute and 15. Each of you do.
This is a very important question for all of us to look into ourselves to answer. I came from Alberta as a young doctor, started work at St. Paul's Hospital, and met people from parts of the world I'd never come across before. I had to get used to the idea that it wasn't all like Southern Alberta, that there's a more complex world out there. I then worked in Indigenous communities, Dease Lake, Lillooet, Campbell River, dealing with a lot of Indigenous people as patients. Got to know them, got to know their way of life, and I believe there's a young, maybe not so young man in Lillooet now who was named after me when I delivered that baby from his mother. And so that's the kind of experience that humanizes it for you and makes you realize we are all equal. We all have to feel like we belong here, that we're citizens, and we'll be respected in British Columbia. And to my mind, that's one of the highest duties of government, is to make sure that every single person in this province feels that they are equally engaged and involved. And when I hear John Horgan talking about us and them, good and bad, friends and enemies, it's actually kind of sad to see a leadership figure like Mr. Horgan degrade himself by going to dividing communities rather than uniting them. I believe that everybody in British Columbia needs to be treated equally, respectfully, and that's our duty in government.
Mr. Horgan, to you.
Well, thank you. Saatchi, and I grew up in southern Vancouver Island. I was a lacrosse player. I played with Indigenous friends. I played with South Asian friends. For me, I did not see color. I felt that everyone around me was the same. And I brought that through my entire adult life, and I've instilled that in my children. And this generation and the generation after continues to see everyone equally. Gays, lesbians, people of color, regardless of who you are, people need to be included. I think it's a bit rich for Mr. Wilkinson to be talking about inclusion to me and casting aspersions on my character. What I've tried to focus on since I had the opportunity to represent people in my community is to bring people together, to unite people, to recognize that we are all in this, regardless of our background, regardless of our orientation. We all need each other to help out. I believe that what we need to do is tell the stories of our diversity. That's why we've established a Chinese Canadian Museum, so that the 150 years of participation in our culture,
sir,
in our society.
Sir, with the 15 seconds left, this is a question about your own personal reflection.
And I'm saying to you that we need to tell the stories about who we are as British Columbians. That's what I grew up learning, and that's what I want to do as the leader of the government. I think that's critically important, that you lead by example based on what you believe. I haven't seen that from Mr. Wilkinson in the past week.
And that is time, Mr. Horgan. And we go to you, Ms. Firstineau. I'll repeat the question. How have you personally reckoned with your own privilege and an unconscious bias as a white political leader?
I think the moment for me that really hit it home was imagining being a mother and saying to my child, if you're approached by a policeman, don't do anything, just put your hands up. I can't imagine being a mother and imagining that my child, my son, might die because of the color of his skin. We aren't all equal. I wish we were, but we're not. In this province, in this country, and around the world, people who are black, people who are of color, are still experiencing systemic and personal racism on a daily basis. The three of us cannot reckon what that's like because we are white. But we have to, in our roles, work to end that systemic racism and work to ensure that all mothers can let their children go out and not be worried that they're going to be killed.
Thank you, Ms. Firstineau. Now, back to you. Per the draw on a specific question for each leader on social issues, your first question. The Greens have had trouble attracting candidates and voters who represent the diversity of BC. Why do you think this is? You have 1 minute.
It's something we absolutely need to look at and work on, and it connects right to the question that you just asked. We're going to make better decisions as a province. We're going to make better decisions as legislators and decision makers when the people making the decisions bring all perspectives to the table. We have increased our diversity in this election campaign, despite it being a snap campaign, but we have a long way to go, and I'm committed to that. We need more people of color. We need more diversity, and we need to have that because it's how we're going to make better decisions. It is about perspective. When you haven't experienced how it is to be young or female or black or indigenous, and you're trying to make decisions that impact those communities, you cannot understand it fully. So we need those people, we need that diversity, so that we're making decisions that reflect what needs to happen in this province.
Thank you. Your follow-up question. You have one of the highest rates of First Nations youth in your Vancouver Island riding, youth who are in care. Your MLA office has advocated for many young Indigenous mothers facing removal, apprehension of their babies by the provincial government. Why have you become so personally involved in these cases?
We are still removing Indigenous children from their families at the same rate as during the residential school era. And the mothers and the parents that we see in our office are devoted and loving. Most of the removals that happen in this province, over 70%, are because of a subjective idea of neglect, which really means poverty. We're removing children because of poverty from their parents, the trauma of that on a child, on an infant's brain, on the mother, on the community, is what we are replicating generation over generation. It's why we have so many of the problems we have right now. I cannot understand why either of the two parties feel the urgency, do not feel the urgency that I feel on addressing this issue. We need to stop this in Canada and in BC.
Thank you, Ms. Forstinone.
And that was Shachi Curl of the Angus Reid Institute moderating last Tuesday's evening's debate. The debate then turned to questions around homelessness, as a rising number of homeless tent cities, especially in Vancouver's Strathcona Park, spark controversy and tensions and questions about why there is worsening homelessness in British Columbia.
Mr. Horgan, now your first question on this theme. Across BC, tent cities are becoming semi-permanent fixtures. What are you going to do to help people living in those tents and address the impacts on BC communities? You also have 1 minute.
Thank you. We were the first government in Canada to put in place a standalone Minister of Mental Health and Addictions. We brought forward modular housing, thousands of units to help people get out of tents and into homes. I mentioned AJ earlier on as a beacon, an example of how you can transform someone's life who's riddled with addictions and has significant challenges by giving them a home and giving them the services that they need. Making sure that we have social workers, psychologists, and other healthcare professionals there for people to make that transition out of the tent, into a home, and back into the community. These are daunting challenges. They didn't happen overnight, and they won't be resolved overnight. But we need to make a commitment each and every day. That's why having someone at the cabinet table that is only focused on those issues makes a transformative difference in the lives of individuals. Is it a challenge? Yes, it is. We have much more work to do.
Thank you, Mr. Horgan. Your next question. 5,000 people have died since the opioid crisis was declared a public health emergency in 2016. Dr. Bonnie Henry has long called for nurses to be able to prescribe pharmaceuticals as an alternative to toxic street drugs. And yet, it took until this pandemic for you to adopt her recommendations. Why so long?
We have been working with Dr. Henry, and her advice on the pandemic has been, on the opioid crisis has been stellar. We have worked on prescription alternatives to dirty street drugs. The pandemic has created a bigger problem. We had seen a decline in deaths from overdoses over time. They started to spike up again because of the pandemic. We had borders closed, so the toxic street drugs got worse. That's why we accelerated prescription alternatives. Mr. Wilkinson made some useful suggestions this summer during debate. We're hoping to incorporate that if we get the blessing of the people of BC to form another government. These challenges are profound, and we need to make sure that we're all working on it together. But it starts by making sure that all orders of government, federal, provincial, and municipal, understand that these are our brothers, our sisters, our neighbors, our co-workers who are struggling with addictions. They need our help, not our contempt. We need to focus on lifting them up and giving them the tools they need to recover. That's why we've tripled treatment beds since we came to government, particularly for young people.
Thank you, Mr. Horgan. Now, leaders, it's your turn to debate on social issues. This round, we're making a little change. You will have 15 seconds for the question, 30 seconds for an uninterrupted answer, and then 2 minutes and 15 seconds for free debate. As per the draw, Mr. Wilkinson begins with a question to John Horgan.
One of your cabinet ministers said recently that permanent tent cities are the right approach. Do you agree that having permanent tent cities is acceptable in Canada and especially in British Columbia, Mr. Horgan?
I believe that the homelessness crisis grew by 30% between 2014 and 2017. It's been growing steadily, about a 1% a year since then. Profound challenges that need our attention and our focus. I believe that we need to look at all of the options available to us. We've been moving people, we've been purchasing hotels, moving people into them, and making sure that they have services while they're there. These are disruptive events in people's lives. It's not easy to find yourself without a home and without a house. We need to make sure we give them our compassion, not our contempt.
Well, and that same cabinet minister referred to your rundown motels policy by saying you can't scoop people out of a park and put them in a rundown hotel and expect it to succeed. It's designed to fail. And yet that's what you persist in doing. We see it spilling onto the streets of Maple Ridge and Victoria and Vancouver, increasing street disorder, sadly increasing crime because the criminals are preying upon these people. I have said let's treat the causes and prevent the harm. And is there something in the way of treating people with schizophrenia? You treat them with a tent or a rundown motel. Why aren't we treating these mental illnesses? Brain injuries don't get treated with a tent or a rundown motel. So, Mr. Horgan, I'd challenge you by saying that your policy has been a colossal failure, and it's causing street disorder in towns all over British Columbia that nobody sees any end to until we have an implemented program like I've talked about of getting psychiatric nurses working with the police and increasing the number of police officers to fill the 200 vacancies that you left, we now have crime rates rapidly rising in Vancouver, Maple Ridge,
Victoria. Mr. Wilkinson, let him respond.
I'm curious, Andrew, that as if this just started a couple of weeks ago for you, this has been a challenge in British Columbia for decades. The downtown east side is infamous around North America. We've been working diligently, as I suspect you were as well, to address these issues. We're looking at using the Riverview lands because the people of Coquitlam say we want this to be a haven, a sanctuary for people struggling with mental health, addictions, and other issues. That's how you create solutions, working with communities. Other communities like Vancouver and Victoria are looking at solutions that meet their needs. The province's responsibility is to make sure the resources are there for those communities and those people. We need to build up a system that was torn down over many decades, not over many weeks.
And these things need to be judged by their results. And we see the results on the streets of Kelowna, the streets of Kamloops, the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. It's not working, Mr. Horgan. So when do you stop?
Stop
pursuing a dead end? When do you stop hitting your head against the wall and do something constructive to treat the causes to prevent the harm?
You need to help people.
You've got to take some responsibility.
Let Mr. Horgan respond.
You don't have solutions, Andrew. If you had them, you would have implemented them in the 16 years that you had. The problem got worse, not better, on your watch. I think it's rich for you to throw this back at Sonia and I, who for the past 3.5 years, we've been working together to solve these challenges.
All right, that's time for this segment.
The moderator then gave the chance to ask about a social issue to Green leader Sonia Furstenau.
Thank you, John. When you called the election, it ended the review of the Police Act, which was looking at systemic racism. Do you think your government has done enough to address systemic racism in British Columbia?
I agree. Systemic racism is a critical problem in British Columbia and indeed across Canada and, in fact, North America. What we've seen in the United States is a wake-up call for all of us. And I think we've heard tonight that all of us agree that we have a responsibility as white leaders to make sure we're doing what we can to reduce systemic racism. That's why we put in place an all-party committee.
I think it's interesting you were approached by the black community to pass as a province the UN Declaration on the Decade of People of African Descent in 2017, and there is no progress made on that. Having made that declaration, had you passed that as a province, it would have actually brought services, funding, and benefits to the black community in BC. I also look to the impacts that so many government policies have on Indigenous communities in this province and the lack of urgency to recognize the systemic racism that exists in the relationship between the provincial government and Indigenous people in this province. We passed UNDRIP, and yet in the first session that we had after that, we did not see your government apply the lens that it was supposed to be applied with that piece of legislation. And we heard from First Nations and Indigenous people that they were not treated as equals in government-to-government relationships.
That is not correct, Sonia. We agreed, all of us, to put in place a work plan, and that work is underway, has been underway, and will continue. A little thing called the global pandemic happened along the way, but despite that, officials in the government continue to work with the First Nations Leadership Council and other groups across British Columbia to make sure that the work that we all did together would be implemented and solidified, not just for a short period of time, but for the rest of time in British Columbia. That's what Indigenous peoples deserve. So we're going to make some mistakes, we're going to disagree, but the fact of the matter is we now have a table and a framework to work under. I'm very proud of that, and I know you are too.
But the work plan isn't sufficient right now, and the urgency to address systemic racism, both for Indigenous people and the black community in this province, it doesn't seem to exist within your government.
I just disagree with you, Sonia. We've been working on this from day one. Ravi Kalon did a profound amount of work on anti-racism. He's passed that on to Ann Kang, and we're going to continue that work for as long as we possibly can.
And those were some of the top excerpts of the debate held Tuesday night between leaders of the three major parties in BC. The election will be held on October 24th, a Saturday, but you can vote in advance polls from the 15th until the 21st. That's starting on Thursday and going through for a week. For more information, go to elections.bc.ca.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.